Today marks 4 months since the management of Medicaid in Iowa was put into private hands. So, how has the transition gone? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, several perspectives. We'll check in with a patient whose family has struggled under the new management. Also, a healthcare provider who's not happy with it. We'll also hear from the Iowa Department of Human Services and from a Democratic state senator who's questioning the managed care organizations in the legislature. Join us with your view. Do you receive Medicaid 4 months in? How has private management been working out? Join our discussion. First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, August 1st, marks 4 months since the management of Medicaid in Iowa was put into private hands. The health care program for low-income Iowans has more than 560,000 recipients in our state. They've been transitioning to management under one of three private companies, Amerigroup, AmeriHealth, and United Healthcare. Governor Branstad, when he launched this, says the private management companies are going to offer more efficient, flexible service, also saving money. This hour, another update on the transition 4 months after launch. A little later in the program, we'll be hearing from the Iowa Department of Human Services. They've got some data tracking how the transition has been going. Also, a Democratic state senator, Liz Mathis, will be joining us. She's questioning the managed care organizations in the legislature. Are you receiving Medicaid in Iowa? How has this transition gone for you? What's it been like? What are your chief concerns? How satisfied are you? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave a comment. Let's first talk with Pat Giorgio, founder and owner of Evergreen Estates, a residential care communities that provide services for seniors, joining us by phone. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Tell us a little bit about Evergreen Estates. How many seniors are involved in your care communities?
Yes, I have three residential care communities all in Cedar Rapids. And I have a total of 114 residents between the three communities.
Okay. And a lot of these seniors are needing services and are entitled to services under Medicaid. So how has the transition been going for you 4 months in?
It's been a very rocky start. It's been a very difficult 3 months. The first month I tried to stay very positive and assumed it would all smooth out. The reality has been it's continued to be quite rocky. It's been my accounts receivable has mushroomed. In advance, I actually, because I'd heard that it would might be a difficult transition, I got a line of credit with my bankers of $100,000. I'm billing roughly $40,000 to $50,000 a month in HCBS services, home and community based. And I've used up that $100,000 in my line of credit. I have, tried to raise alarms with the three MCOs and with DHS. And as a result, I've had some success now. I'm getting a number of claims paid. But frankly, it's been very, very difficult to manage.
Wow. So you've taken out $100,000 in credit, and that's been used up. How much of a delay is there compared to what you were used to before management was put into private hands?
The previous system was working very, very well, in my opinion. I was usually paid for claims. I submitted them electronically, and I was usually paid by IME, Iowa Medicaid Enterprises, 8 days later. Now it's taking, it's more than 90 days out, and I'm still, I have about 15% of my claims from 3 months ago still not paid.
Mm-hmm. Are you working with all three of the managed care organizations?
I am, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do they say when you address this? And you've been, must be very frustrating over the course of 4 months. What are the reasons you're given that the billing that the money's not being transferred quickly.
One of the biggest challenges, I think, in my opinion, the state was clearly not ready to hand off the entire Medicaid system to the three MCOs. One of my biggest frustrations, because I've reviewed how this has been done in many other states, in the state of Iowa, the state chose to basically turn over the entire program. You know, it was delayed from January 1st because of CMS's concerns that whether or not Iowa was really ready to transfer over. And so it was delayed to April 1st. But even then, just to try to give you a couple of examples, home and community-based services are billed somewhat uniquely in the state of Iowa. We have what you'd call atypical NPI numbers, which is part of the whole billing system. The three MCOs, which of course are all out-of-state companies, did not understand the Iowa billing system. And I'm not sure, I can't speak to what happened with hospitals or physicians or even other long-term care, but I can tell you that when it came to the meals that you bill under home and community-based and when it came just to the services that we bill, they did not recognize the numbers that we were supposed to use to bill. So there was a complete disconnect, and the MCOs had to scramble to try to update systems and fix things so that they could actually communicate with the identifying numbers, the Medicaid numbers that we had to use.
Mm-hmm. The department, the Iowa Department of Human Services, will be hearing from a representative later on in the program. What role have they played here? Have they been helpful in working this out?
I'm going to be really honest. The MCOs, frankly, have been more helpful than DHS has for my individual company. One of the challenges was that there was no rate floor on the meals, for instance. And I know Meals on Wheels people were in dire straits for not being paid because the electronic systems did not recognize claims when there was no rate floor. In other words, the state of Iowa, in an efficient way, required providers to actually submit data as to what their meal costs were so that we were actually being paid according to our cost, and this varies around the state, and that's a fair and just way to do it. But because there was no one set rate, the billing systems of all three MCOs just kicked out those meals charges and didn't pay them. They didn't understand because there was no rate floor. It took me months to get the various MCOs to accept the notice of decision that I had to have for each individual client. And when they said that one of the MCOs could not accept my notice of decision because they were worried about fraud if a provider should falsify a document and submit it. So DHS was then asked to submit notice of decisions for all these clients, and they replied, my understanding secondhand is that they would not do that, that their system wasn't set up to submit each individual notice of decision. So that clearly had not been well thought out, and it had not been tested. I don't think the HCBS waiver clients, I don't think their type of billing had been tested at all before this rolled out, and that was, in my opinion, a very big mistake.
Mm-hmm. Pat, how has this, I assume you've been in contact with other business owners who are operating similar care communities such as yours. You oversee care communities that involve giving services to 114 seniors, as you stated at the outset. You must be checking around the state, and there are thousands of caregivers similar to yours around the state. Are you an anomaly? Is this something that others are experiencing in your position as business owners?
My understanding is others have experienced this as well. I have attended at least one of Senator Mathis's meetings for providers, and believe me, I was not alone in this. The home health agencies actually were, frankly, in worse shape than I was. And I know the Meals on Wheels people were really, really struggling. I have spoken with a couple of mental health professionals that I know in the area that are considering getting out of the Medicaid system entirely, and that concerns me a great deal.
Getting out, folding up their tents, closing their businesses.
They can't sustain this non-payment, and so they'll just either go private pay only or get out of the business for mental health consulting, and that's the last thing this state needs.
Mm-hmm. Pat, have you had similar thoughts?
No, I have not, although I look at the way my business is operating and wondering what I'm going to do 6 months from now if something doesn't improve, and that concerns me greatly. One other area, besides just the very slow payment and the challenges of getting paid, I am tracking how much additional office hours, people hours we're actually putting in per week,
mm-hmm.
working with three MCOs instead of one system, and just the fact that we have to reapply but resubmit claims that aren't paid properly over and over. And it is averaging a 20 hours per week in additional labor for my three buildings together. So I'm incurring additional administrative costs that are significant and getting paid less.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a business model that people are going to jump into. I'm a very big believer in the waiver program. I think it's a social justice issue. So, and I'm very stubborn, so I don't want to get out. But things have to improve.
Mm-hmm. Do you see them trending upward, or are you still in a trough?
I would say, in fairness, the three MCOs have been working very hard to try to solve these problems. They're not solved entirely, but I will say that they're trying hard to improve the system. But again, the fact that additional labor, additional office work is going to be a burden I'm going to have to absorb. It takes away from the time I can spend with my residents. I worry about whether or not the same quality of care that I demand can be sustained if we are paid less and have to work harder. That's not a business model that improves quality of care or quality of life for seniors.
I'm glad you mentioned residents. Of course, they are the focus of all this. Health outcomes for Medicaid recipients, 114 under the care of your Evergreen Estates. How are the residents noticing this? Are they noticing this very bumpy transition, according to you?
Well, I would say the one area where they're really noticing it, certainly we have not changed the level of care or the services that my nursing staff and my dietary staff and everyone is providing, but they have had to face that bumpiness of having new case managers. They've been very used to the same people coming in to visit them from the social services point of view. Now they have all new case managers in all three buildings, and of course all my staff has to get acquainted with all these new case managers from the three MCOs. So it's been disruptive to them. We've tried to minimize it, but it absolutely makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. You're a business owner. Before we say goodbye, Pat, the governor sold this as a way to become more efficient, to offer more flexible service, to save money overall. What is your reaction to those criteria based on what you've experienced?
Well, I am a business owner, and I have to pay the bills in order to keep my credit rating so that the banks will work with me. And I know that the MCOs have to do that. They have to make a profit. But what I am concerned about is those cost savings that the state of Iowa is going to see, I believe, are going to come off the backs of small owners and providers such as myself. And small business owners are still the backbone of this country and certainly of this state. And it disturbs me greatly that we are being impacted negatively through no fault of our own and through no desire to change a system that, frankly, worked well. And if I could add one other point, because I think it's important.
Sure.
I've just been being told by my three administrators that they're being notified that as of today, August 1st, Unity Point clinics, at least in Cedar Rapids, I can't speak to anywhere else, but we've been told that the physicians in the Unity Point clinics, which is a big part of the health services in Cedar Rapids, are not taking any new Medicaid patients. I know that's a direct relation. It's absolutely a cause and effect to this new system with increased administrative costs. And that concerns me very much because as we get new residents in, coming into the area, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get them doctors who will take them if they're on Medicaid.
Right. Are there alternatives?
I don't know. I've asked my staff to start researching it. We're finding a few. But it used to be, at least in Cedar Rapids, you had good access to wonderful physicians. And I'm very concerned that people are actually going to have much less choice rather than what the governor says is going to be more choice when it comes to health care.
Pat Giorgio, thank you very much. We have others to hear from. Thank you very much. It sounds like we'll need to check back with you, Pat Giorgio, founder and owner of Evergreen Estates, a residential care communities providing services for over 100 Iowa seniors. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you for having me on.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Another update on the Medicaid situation here in Iowa. It's today marking 4 months since the management of Medicaid in the state was put into private hands. Asking you, how has it gone? Are you a Medicaid recipient? Are you a provider, perhaps a business owner like Pat? How has this transition been going? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your question or your comment. Heather Young, we spoke with her before. She's a woman whose family receives Medicaid in several different ways. Joining us again, we checked with you in November, I believe back in March, and also perhaps in May. Heather Young, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here.
We have about 8 or 9 minutes here. You have several people, in your family, dependent on Medicaid.
Yes.
A granddaughter, Eleanor, I believe, with autism. How have things been going for her and her treatment?
So we recently, a few weeks ago, had a meeting with Eleanor's new case manager from the insurance company. Came to our home, and we spent about a couple hours going over Eleanor's case and telling her everything she needed to know about Eleanor. At the same meeting was Eleanor's old state worker case manager, who already has all this information and has already made Eleanor's plan. And, you know, this is old news to her. We were teaching, you know, informing the new case manager. Now, keep in mind, we purposely picked the one form of insurance that kept the state managers, the case managers, on board because we wanted to keep Eleanor's case manager. When you are talking about particularly children with disabilities and special needs and they need therapies, like if you have autism,
right.
Figuring out like how to access the different programs and how to pay for them, it is a spider's web of complicated paperwork and understanding. So keeping her old state case manager was really important. So now we have two case managers, which means we've doubled the bureaucracy, but none of Eleanor's services have changed.
Is that eventually going to be worked out, or are they doing sort of a baton handoff so that the old meets the new? And
well, that's not what we were told, but actually, by osmosis, we just found out, like last week, that has actually happened because the old state case manager has now left and has gotten a new job. So now we have no state case manager, which is the reason why we picked this insurance. But it doesn't really matter because out of the three, back when we were told we had to pick an insurance, it really was eeny, meeny, miny, mo. That we had no information about what we were picking in any of the insurance companies.
In Eleanor's case, who are you with? AmeriHealth? United?
We were originally with United, and then because I eeny, meeny, my that. And then we switched to AmeriHealth because they were the one insurance provider that kept the state managers.
Mm-hmm. Has Eleanor's health care, her treatment, been impacted?
No, because she hasn't been sick lately.
She's
fine. Now I just have to do the homework to find, is there a process to find a new state case manager? Now that we know our old one is gone, we weren't told if there's a process to get a new state case manager, or is it like you were suggesting through osmosis that we no longer have a state case manager, now we just have the insurance case manager who knows nothing about how the state program, you know, how you access all these different programs.
When you run into we have about 5 minutes left. We probably don't have enough time for you to outline all the bumps in the road that you have here, but when you have a bump in the road, can you do you go to the MCO? Do you go to the Department of Human Services? Where are you getting satisfaction here in addressing the challenges you see?
I would have gone to her state case manager, who's been her longtime care coordinator. But now that she has left, now I guess I just call the 1-800 number on the insurance card and hope I find someone who can help me.
At the MCO?
Yes.
At AmeriHealth.
My other concern is for my elderly parents and my mother-in-law who live in a nearby nursing home, who all three of our elderly parents have mental health issues, and they live in a nursing home that's kind of the nursing home of last resort for elderly people who are poor and aren't accepted in the other nursing homes. Because, you know, nursing homes do not have to accept someone who is on Medicaid. It's optional.
Right. So how has that transition been going?
Well, I've been told by the billing department at my parents and my mother-in-law's nursing home that they are running into problems, that they are having to do duplicate submissions for paperwork, and they aren't getting reimbursed. And this is a problem because if my if this nursing home closes, we have no other option. There is no other nursing home in Johnson County that will take our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents are very ill. There's a reason why they qualify for nursing home status. And if there's no other nursing home that will take them, I don't have anywhere else for them to go.
You have a sense from the nursing home that they are on the edge, that they may close?
What I know is that the billing lady, the one person who does the billing for over 100 people, is super frustrated and super tired, and I absolutely would not be surprised if she doesn't quit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start, I don't know, the nursing home, at first, they just recently got bought out by a multi-state corporation, and at first I was not happy because I liked the mom-and-pop homespun care that my parents have been getting. But now that all of this transition stuff has happened, now I'm thinking our only saving grace is that this nursing home is now part of a huger corporation, because maybe they'll have the money to ride this out.
Right. You've got other family members, don't you? Some college-age students there with some issues that require Medicaid?
Yes. And we haven't had problems with them. No one has needed any hearing aid services or vision services lately, and that's what Medicaid covered for my children. So they're actually okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, knock on wood, everything is great on that part.
Well, we're 4 months in, Heather Young. Can you envision a time when these wrinkles, significant wrinkles, I guess, in your case, what you're describing will be ironed out, that it will be smoother?
Well, I don't see any political will for that to change. I think that this is going to be a situation where this process continues, and like Pat so eloquently said before, that it's going to happen on the backs of the providers and on the people with the actual needs.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Iowa, I did take Eleanor in recently for an evaluation at the disability clinic at the University of Iowa, and the provider, one provider there, told me they've already seen a huge uptick in people coming to their clinic to the point where they are overloaded, because they've had busloads and vanloads of people who used to get services up in Cedar Rapids. Their clinics are now closed. And so they're coming to the University of Iowa because that's the place of last resort.
The University of Iowa is not going to close.
Right. It's a nonprofit. It has to take them. And so people who were getting group home services up north have no choice but to pack up people and drive an hour or two to come down to the university to get to get assistance.
Heather, we have to take a break here. Thank you for updating us. I'm sorry to hear about the situation you've been describing here. We certainly hope it improves. Heather Young,
me too.
Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Okay.
4 months after the launch, April 1st of Medicaid going into private management here in Iowa, we're checking with Medicaid recipients, also those who are providers of health care to some of our seniors. Join our conversation when we come back. We'll talk with Amy McCoy, spokesperson for the Department of Human Services, about what their data is saying, if it's been matching the stories we've been hearing. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, marking 4 months since the management of Medicaid in Iowa has gone into private hands. It's a healthcare program for low-income Iowans, Medicaid. More than 560,000 recipients in our state alone. And now they're transitioning, have been in the last few months, in management under one of three private companies, United Healthcare, AmeriHealth, AmeriGroup. Governor Branstad saying that these private management companies will offer more efficient, flexible service, also save money. So this hour we're getting updates from those who are receiving Medicaid directly, individuals. We heard from Heather Young there, too, with several family members entitled to Medicaid dollars and how that transition has been going. Also, Pat Giorgio of a residential care community, a business owner providing services for over 100 Iowa seniors. We'd like to hear from you this hour, 1-866-780-9100. Are you receiving Medicaid in Iowa? What's this transition been like for you? What are your chief concerns? Are you satisfied? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Amy McCoy joining us once again, also has been on past shows concerning our Medicaid management transition, a spokeswoman for the Iowa Department of Human Services in our Des Moines studio. Amy, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about the data. Well, first of all, because it may not be clear to everyone, what is, in short form, what is the role of the DHS in this transition? You oversee it.
Right. The Department of Human Services oversees the Medicaid program. So really, as we transition to this new model, we will be the oversight entity to make sure that the managed care organizations, or MCOs, are meeting all of their contract requirements through this transition.
Mm-hmm. We heard from a couple people in the first half hour, and I know you you got to listen as well. React to the woes, the frustrations, the real anxiety that still exists out there 4 months after the start of the transition on April 1st.
Right. I'm sorry to hear of any of delays or burdens for our providers or members. This is a large magnitude change, and what they were talking about earlier is exactly the types of issues that we're working on and trying to work on very quickly to get those resolved. Really sorting through, is something a system issue? Is it a technology programming issue? Is it a call center training? When the issue is happening to you and you're a provider or a member, it's really important to get a response. And so we've got the ability to escalate issues for our providers and members, and we do absolutely want to hear from them so that we can be on top of those issues. I think it's very important to point out, especially with our providers, and someone mentioned this earlier, they don't have to participate in the Medicaid program. They're very dedicated to Iowans by doing this participation in the program, and we want them to continue to participate in it. It's very much in the interest of the MCOs to make sure that providers are getting paid timely and accurately to be able to keep those providers in their networks. We mm-hmm. have some pretty stringent requirements on what those networks need to look like, so they do need those providers to be participating so that we have the right access for our members.
Right. We were hearing from Pat Giorgio, quite distressed there, even taking out $100,000 in credit to keep her residential care communities providing services to over 114, I think she put it, at Iowa seniors, providing services also paid for by Medicaid. And that money running out, did the DHS expect this type of bump in the road?
So when we look at other states that have transitioned to managed care, the transitions have gone similarly. We had an opportunity to work with CMS very closely. That's the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and get some technical support to try to have all of the systems in place. Some of the things that we're experiencing right now are really those things that you need to be into the transition to iron out, things like particular billing issues. And when we look at our providers, many of our providers were used to billing a number of commercial plans before. But we do have a smaller number of providers who this is absolutely new for. And so what we've done hundreds of trainings across the state. We've done specific trainings to specific provider types. And each week we're bringing in the provider associations to get that feedback, to be as up to date as possible on any issues that they're experiencing. So while this change is about, we're about 120 days into this change, we've gotten a lot of feedback and we've really acted upon it to try to make it as smooth as possible going forward. And when we talk about this major system change, we're moving from a very old model that simply paid the bills to a brand new, much more modern model that looks like other commercial plans that are offered. And so that is a large magnitude of change. And while we're hearing there are issues, there are some really good things happening, too, that I wouldn't want to be overlooked. And those include things like the education and outreach that the managed care organizations are already doing, things that Medicaid didn't do before, like sending out reminders to get mammograms or colon cancer screenings. the old Medicaid program just didn't have the capacity to do this. You know, we're hearing of people who maybe waited for a long time for the type of technologically advanced wheelchair, and now they've been able to get it right away because they have a new case manager who's helped advocate for it. Or even those families who may have paid hundreds of dollars in copays for prescriptions before, and now they don't have that copay at all. So there are lots of good things happening, but of course our focus is very much on getting to any of the issues that are remaining to help those providers so that they can continue to provide those services and the access that our members need.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the billing issue, hundreds of Medicaid providers have run into those billing issues since the transition on April 1st. There was a survey released by Iowa Democratic legislators. We'll hear from Senator Liz Mathis in just a moment. But that survey released just a few days ago, responses from more than 400 Iowa providers, doctors, hospitals, not-for-profit agencies like the one Pat runs, also clinics. Do you see the level of dissatisfaction in this survey also in the data that you use to track this transition?
So when we talk with our providers, and we have about 30,000 providers across the state, so a great number of them, we've actually been going out every month and having monthly meetings so that people can come, both members and providers, and give us feedback. Again, we're having those regular meetings with the associations, so we're really getting it from the people who are out there doing the billing every day to find out what exactly needs to be done. And you mentioned the data that we had presented last week. When we look at that data and we see what the health plans have done for claims that have been submitted and combine that with kind of our ongoing fee-for-service, because we still do have some of the old program there, we're seeing right about 9 to 10 million claims that have been submitted and processed. And that's right about where we were last year for that same time period. So not a great change in the number of claims that are being submitted. And then we do have a little bit higher of a denial rate right now. I think about the same time last year, the denial rate was around 10 to 15%. A little bit higher than that right now, but we would anticipate that when you're looking at a new system and you're looking at a new type of billing. So, again, many of our providers were used to billing even up to 5 different Medicaid contracts before. Now we've got 3 new health plans that are there, so we would expect a little bit more on the denial end at first.
Pat Giorgio, founder and owner of Evergreen Estates, one comment of hers jumped out when we were talking about where she turns to get help when there's a new path to be trodden there. And she said that she found the MCOs more helpful than the Iowa Department of Human Services. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's as it should be right now, since they really are the ones who are administering the benefits and they are the ones who are paying the bills. So we want the providers to get very familiar with working with those systems, since those are the ones they're going to be working with going forward. Having those good relationships and being able to show that responsiveness will be important for the health plans, especially as we go into a period now where we're going to be monitoring that compliance very, very closely, examining all of the data, making sure they have those networks out there, making sure they are meeting those timeliness requirements on paying the bills.
And there are sanctions if they don't meet the requirements.
Absolutely. That's okay. An important piece of the oversight. We have a lengthy contract and was well thought out and well evaluated to make sure that they have to perform at a level that's actually going to help the health of our Medicaid population. When we take a few steps back, what is the goal of this overall transition? We want to improve the quality of care that our members are getting. We want there to be more accountability in the entire program and how the payments are being made and what our members getting for the money that we are spending on their services. And then finally, by doing that, we want to create a more sustainable program in the long term. When we talk about the Medicaid program, the cost of the program has more than doubled in about the past decade. This program continues to grow and grow in costs. And so managed care is one of the ways that you can examine utilization. And by looking at that and by trying to create a better health outcome, you can save in the long term. That's going to be really important because we want to continue to offer the same types of benefits to our Medicaid members that we've always been able to offer. And through these health plans, we're not only going to be able to do that, but we're also going to have some extra value-added benefits that we've never been able to have before, too. Some prenatal programs, weight loss programs, things like that that can really dig into what's making someone not be well. and how
right.
can we make them better?
Right. Okay. Let's go to Laura. Laura's on the line. Quickly, Laura, we're running short of time. If you could be succinct with your comment or question for Amy McCoy of the Department of Human Services about this transition to Medicaid management in private hands here.
Yes. Thanks, Ben. I just have been sitting here for a while listening. I do have one very quick question, but right before I say that, I want to say I wish that the onus should be on the companies that took over the administration. The onus is not on the providers. And I know Amy's trying to, you know, give a good face on this, but the reality is it's not working for a lot of people. And that's not their fault. They need to be paid. And because it's on the backs of poor people and the elderly, this is just not something people seem to, you know, give a heck about. I'm really disappointed with our legislature. I know the Democrats really tried. Republicans totally laid down and took it. And I'm just angry. And Branstad's going to have to live with this bad legacy. My question is, how many people lost their jobs in DHS because of the privatization?
Okay, so you're saying losing jobs equals savings, but also we have the people out of work, right? Okay,
yeah.
Let's get a reaction quickly, Amy McCoy.
Right. So with our state agency, we did not have to lose any positions during the transition. We actually added several positions to be able to do this important oversight function. We operated on a very slim staff before because, again, we didn't do any of those health functions that the managed care organizations are doing now. We didn't have the same type of care coordination. Where you may see that there were other changes where we have a number of professional contracts that help us operate that program, and some of those were downsized to be able to have the new managed care organizations do those functions.
And that was as expected, as planned?
Correct.
Okay. Amy McCoy, thank you very much for joining us. Spokeswoman for the Iowa Department of Human Services, something tells me we'll be checking back in with you as we get a little further down the road transitioning to private management of Medicaid here in Iowa. Thank you, Amy McCoy, for coming into our studio.
Thanks for having me.
We wind up this hour as we look at the four-month mark after the launch of Medicaid management into private hands on April 1st. Let's end the hour with Senator Liz Mathis, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids. Senator Mathis, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for inviting me.
You called an out-of-session Human Resources Committee meeting, I understand, on this transition last week at the State House. What have you been doing? What are you trying to hear these voices? We've heard just a few this hour.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reasoning behind calling the meeting was, you know, coming after the July 1st enactment of oversight law. So part of that oversight law recommended that we get information from those data dashboards that Amy was talking about, you know, the information that is contractually obligated, actually, so that we can see that and see how far along the MCOs and IME have come since April 1st. The couple of things that Amy was saying, you know, she was talking about that is a large change. Yes, absolutely. I agree with her. And that they're trying to work quickly. The problem with that existed is that we did hear from Mickey Steer, who is the head of IME, that they were ready to go on January 1st. And then we heard they were ready to go on March 1st and then again on April 1st. And clearly, this transition has been pretty bumpy. I think everybody would agree with that. Just, you know, people are trying to figure out how do you, you know, even from pre-authorizations to billings to reimbursements, it's just been a really, really rocky road. So to try to issue an RFP, you know, the ending part of the RFP, who was awarded that in August, and then to try to change a system that's this large between September and December and be ready to go January 1st was an impossibility. I think the governor I think this is inexcusable because the race to January 1st was really to make sure that we weren't back in session and couldn't do anything about it. I really believe that that's what the reasoning was. And so to put everyone in danger, to put all of this, you know, to try to shoehorn a system over 4 months, which, by the way, I know that Amy said that other states have done this transition and had similar issues with you know, billing and et cetera. No other state, CMS told us that no other state in the United States has ever done it the way that Iowa has done it. And they meant that pushed every waiver program across the table and pushed every single children and families coverage across the table. So all Medicaid, everyone who received Medicaid was going into this new system. Other states have done it in layers. They've done intellectual disability waiver and elderly waiver. They've done brain injury waiver or mental health waiver in waves. So the first maybe two waivers might have been tested in 6 months to 18 months, and then the next wave and the next wave. So there are a lot of issues here.
Senator Mathis, I just wanted to make sure we have you react to a couple of the voices we heard in our first half hour, Heather Young and Pat Giorgio. Pat Giorgio of Evergreen Estates, residential care communities, and there are thousands of those across the state, really in dire straits there, taking out $100,000 in credit because she wasn't getting paid on time through the new system. In the experience that you have, hearing testimony, is her experience as a business owner typical? How many are in that situation?
Yes. I mean, people have borrowed up to $500,000, and they've increased their lines of credit up to $2 million. So that is not a rarity. I've heard that from a number of different sources. So when we did our survey, so the House Democrats and the Senate Democrats did a survey, and we asked more than 400 doctors and hospitals and local clinics and nonprofit healthcare providers just what kind of hurdles they've faced, or maybe even headaches and providing high quality care, since this was privatized on April 1st. And by the way, it is, $4.3 billion that we're talking about. So 90% of those we surveyed and they answered, 90% said that privatization has increased their administrative expenses. 79% said they're not getting paid on time. 28% have had to borrow money to pay their bills while waiting to be reimbursed. And 66% said when they do get reimbursed, it's at lower rates than agreed upon. That's a problem. That is a problem.
Let's have you react to the accusation from the governor's office. And let me read a quote here that this is just partisan. It's such a vastly complicated system, Medicaid dealing with over 560,000 recipients in Iowa, billions of dollars at stake here. So it's hard for any one person to have an overview here. So here is Ben Hams, a spokesperson for Governor Terry Branstad. His quote, "So I am not surprised that the hyper-partisan Democrats use an unverified, unscientific survey of unnamed providers to try and undercut a transition that has been approved by federal officials and has been smooth for the vast majority of patients and providers." So react to that. Charge that this is just hyper-partisanship.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the higher road because Ben is a young man and he can point fingers and sling mud. What I'm going to do is take a higher road in this and say, we all need to solve this together. We know that managed care in its purest form moves someone along a continuum of care. And no one is against that. Everyone understands that is what managed care is about. And actually, it's a good thing for the client. It's a good thing for the patient. What has happened here is the way that this was enacted and the way that the governor went about this. This was not discussed. It was not a collaborative process. And so that is what we are having issues with, is that because the system was designed, the transition was designed as it was, it's not going well. And I feel that we need to solve this together. The governor needs to join in with us and help us solve this together to make sure that some of our very large businesses, of which I know that he's concerned, I know that he hears from them, so that they don't go under. He did make a quote last week that was a little troubling to me, that Rod Beauchart from the Gazette, covered some type of meeting that he had with the West Side Conservative Club. And he said the critics want to stick with an old system that didn't work. And most of the complaints are coming from providers who are upset because we're checking on them now. I think that's a huge insult. It's a huge insult to those providers, as Amy McCoy said, who are offering a wealth of service to those who are vulnerable in the state. So my high road is this, that we need to work together to make this better for not only the patients and the recipients, but also for the providers who are doing this very important work.
We have just a minute left, and we've got to go. So specifically, what does that mean to work together in the coming months as we lead to the next legislative session?
Well, that the governor doesn't think that we're checking on the providers. I think someone needs to share information with him and show him just exactly what providers do across the state, but that we need to be patient. We also need to put deadlines on things and make sure that providers are being paid what they need to be paid according to a contractual agreement. And it needs to be a much smoother transition, and we need to put some urgency around this. And the governor is just that person who could do that.
Okay. Senator Liz Mathis, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, thank you for joining us this hour.
Okay. Thanks, Ben. Thanks for inviting me.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with help from Graham Bly today, our student intern in Des Moines. Also help from Rick Fredrickson, the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows, is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.